Hello, welcome to CarCast. Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea here with Bill Goldberg. How are you?
Awesome, man. I'm doing good. Had an unbelievable trip. Before we get onto the car stuff, and this airs, a day after, but as a dad, I gotta say that my son, our son, was a freaking superstar last night, man. It was just killer to see. And I said it in the longest post humanly possible. I think I reached the 5,000 word post on Instagram, but as a parent, it was just killer to see what happened last night. Gage hit a walk-off single to win their game in the seventh inning against a bitter rival, who is the reason why we're so good, because it's a very healthy rivalry between these two teams. They're great freaking teams. They got great kids. They're always at each other's throat. They've got scouts that come to every one of our games, and it's just always culminates. We're at the top of our division. And, he came through last night. And the dude that opposed him was a great catcher, supposedly the best catcher in the state. And Gage never gets any credit at catching. He's going to Colorado to play football, but a lot of people don't know he played baseball, right? So Gage threw this kid out at second base, like the Flash. It was so fast. And Gage and the other catcher had more guys steal on him last night than Gage has the entire year. So as a parent, man, it was freaking awesome. It was really cool. It was a on and to see him be that guy in front of all his fans and his teammates, man, it was very rewarding. So there's my gushy parent shit. So
I know Gage is a great baseball player. I remember him playing when he was a kid. We were all at the batting cages together back when you lived out here in California. He was just kind of getting into it. And the discipline he's grown into from being out here years ago to what he's doing now is amazing. And like you said, he's going to Colorado. He's going to play football. That was a big decision. But I know he still loves baseball and he's not about to let down any of his teammates
no, and
just
it's
because
tough.
he's got his next step decided for him, you know?
And as a parent and as a human, it really sucks, I gotta tell you. I mean, because as happy as you are for him now, and they were number one in the state, and they're gonna go to playoffs most likely and do well, he's only got like a month and a half of it left. And it was his first love as a sport, and he's not going to be playing anymore. CU doesn't have a baseball team, and it's going to be tough enough to play football. But you really are happy for him. But at the same time, man, he's having so much fun now, and it's going to be over with. It kind of sucks. But you got to live in the day, man. That's all you can do. Is you're only as good as your next day. So, and Friday night, after what we did to them last night, and after me yelling and screaming and freaking ah, man, they're probably gonna beat us 50 or nothing. But we gave them a lot of ammunition, man. But it was cool. It was a lot of fun. So
That's good. That's fun.
thank you for giving me that platform. That was cool.
I don't know if you saw this yet, but Ram put out a little teaser, which is a Ram truck towing another one up on the trailer. We assume it's the HRO, right? The Ram High Output. Now, if you guys haven't heard about this already, I don't know how much we've gotten into it, but there's not going to be a TRX replacement anytime soon. Ram is going toward their six-cylinder engines, and they're dropping the big V8. But they're doing this one called the RHO, which could have the twin turbo 3-liter inline six, probably 540 horsepower. Maybe it's going to have a little bit more. They have versions that are about 550. And the idea is with this vehicle, could have the flare fenders, possibly some of the suspension components of the TRX, just not quite the 700 horsepower version. Now, that's not to say there wouldn't be a TRX in the future at some point when we're not sure what the powertrain would be. So they're holding the TRX name for a bigger future product. But in the meantime, they want to come out with something that's competitive with the Raptor, the six-cylinder Raptor, not the Raptor R, obviously, right? We got the TRX and the Raptor R.
But those, it'll be like a Power Wagon, you know, kind of slot.
Kind of. And just kind of fit the mold. So they're saying April 25th. So coming up pretty soon, they're going to pull the cover off this thing and tell us a little bit more about it. But they did tease it a little bit.
You remember meeting Trussell?
Yeah.
You think his creativity is going to really be put on the shelf? I mean, they have to come up with something.
Right? Yes. Yes. And you're right. Mark Trussell from Dodge. I did speak to him and he's trying to work it out. He's trying to get approval from his team over at Dodge to come back onto the podcast. They like to sort of confine his comments when they're recorded, I guess as any communications department would like to, but.
Oh no. You know, they're going above and beyond. You witnessed that at Barrett Jackson. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know you reached out to him and he told me so, and I got to follow up with him and see what we can do to chat with him on the show. But anyway, this is going to be an interesting debut, kind of fits in between the Ram and the TRX as a new vehicle. And I think should be expecting, when do we get a new Ram platform? Don't we get a new Ram platform in the next year or so? I'm not quite sure where we are in the life cycle of that. I could be wrong. I thought that's what I was told, but we'll see.
I don't want to haphazardly switch to GM so quickly, but we got to have Langenfelter back on.
Yeah, I reached out to Ken, and I just don't know that he got the email, because I got to talk to Ken about what he's doing there. His 427 crate engine is getting all the press. He's just doing this naturally aspirated beast of an engine, and then he swapped one into an E-Ray. So combined with the electric motors, he just made this hybrid rocket. I just love the innovation that they're doing over there. They're so ahead of the curve in the world.
And the fact that they don't throw away old school mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know he's having a blast driving these test mules that are coming out of his company, because why not? Excuse me.
He sounds like Farley.
Yeah. I mean, today, as we're recording this, is the 60th birthday of Mustang. So the country is celebrating, and Ford's got huge events, and they debuted a car today, the 60th anniversary, the convertible version of it. And I believe today, I'm not exactly sure what time, it's in the morning now. And Shelby is doing they're releasing something as well. The Shelby American.
It's the 60th anniversary of the Mustang.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have to post the lawman.
Yeah. Post the lawman up there. Do you go in the bubble to get a picture, or do you stand outside the bubble?
No, it's not in the bubble anymore. I'm awaiting a new car capsule from those guys. They've done a much better job of design, and it's going to be a lot aesthetically more pleasing so than the square balloon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool idea, though, and it works well for that car.
Oh, it's a great idea, for sure. It's just aesthetically, it doesn't really fit it, you know, with everything else displayed the way it is, and then there's the bubble. So
yeah, there's just a big bubble. So, but it's a neat idea. So I was checking out your video the other day of the Dodge Coronet, the 70 Dodge Coronet, because I remember seeing it years ago up on the stacker lift out here.
That was its given place. That's where it was parked for 10 years.
Yeah. And there was a few cars there, and I don't know that you have them all. There was a couple of Shelbys. I think you had a 67 Shelby Mustang and you had that car, and not necessarily cars that got driven much, but the Coronet was always sort of scheduled to be driven a little bit. You just, like I said, shit happens. You don't get to it. You got other projects. And there's a handful of cars.
I don't want to sound like a pretentious prick that's got so many things to choose from, but when you've got a number, you know, when you have two or three or four or five cars, to choose what you're going to do that day, what you're going to drive. I don't know, man. I don't really take the automatics out very much because I'm in them for a short period of time and it doesn't provide the same enthusiastic feedback that I get from driving a manual.
Yeah.
If, you know, and so plain and simple, that's the only reason why I didn't drive the car. It may sound stupid, but it's true. So it's a killer car. Like I said, it was the first car I ever went to Barrett and kind of stalked. And then I threatened this dude on stage. But I did it in a you know, I don't know. It was childish. But I loved that car. When I saw it, I flew to Scottsdale and I just Googled over it. And it's been in the collection, you know, since 08. And I've never really done anything with it, man. And the triple barrel carburetor setup, the six pack, has traditionally been one that is extremely temperamental, to say the least. And we experienced that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of my first tear down of old school carburation and rebuild. And I'm about to embark upon it again on the Dodge 330 aluminum car. But I like you and I were talking about a second ago, it's something that I don't like to be dependent upon anybody for anything. And if there are people all around the world that still are old enough to remember tuning carburetors, then I can learn how to do it. And there's so many resources on YouTube or whatever it may be. I just looked up Carter AFB, you know, aluminum, and I wrote in the number of the car.
Yeah.
And then boom, I got three or four different videos and I've spent 3 hours of my life, you know, yesterday looking at it. But it's again, I love these cars and my knowledge is not expansive at all. And I'm the first one to admit that. And I'm a kid at heart and I've got some time on my hands now and let's learn. So I want to start learning how to tear down and rebuild carbs and tuning them properly. Because I got all these freaking cars, whether it's the Cobra, the Coronet, the Z28, you know, the Candymatic.
Yeah,
I've got to be dependent upon somebody to come and tune these things, and it's something that has to be done periodically. And I'd rather learn it myself.
You know, you bring up an interesting point because, you know, for me, in my high school days, you know, messing around with, you know, Mustangs and Camaros, they were already EFI. They were already fuel injected vehicles. And yeah, I worked on some older cars and we restored a 65 Mustang but I haven't probably messed around with a carburetor since I was 15 years old. So it's been a bit, it's just been
consideration, you know? So if you take that into consideration, how old are you?
48.
Okay, 48. Yeah. I'm 10 years older than you, right? And so I know some people that can tune carburetors because they're old enough to remember when they did it, right? Nowadays, it's really rare to find somebody under 50 that really knows how to do it. But in my research, Hemmings was the first video that popped up and you got a 35-year-old kid doing it. That was enlightening to be able to see that you know, the younger generation are learning how to do it so they can pass it on and be knowledgeable, right? So
yeah,
learning from a kid who wasn't alive when these things were freaking sold. So it's cool.
I'm sure there's plenty of people listening that are fantastic at tuning carbs and some that are great at tuning EFI. And I find some that don't like to cross over, you know, like my dad, for example. I don't think he knows the first thing about EFI, but he's messed around with carbs on anything from muscle cars to our Alfa Romeo and back in the day, or a little Fiat or any of that stuff back in the day. Actually, I don't know. He's done, yeah, he's all kinds of stuff from those.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. The most daunting task is not necessarily the tuning of the carburetor, but it's getting, you know, gaskets off that take like 4 hours to scrape off. That's just the biggest pain in the ass. And you don't feel as though you're making any progress.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Just the labor of doing that is the real pain in the ass when I look at trying to tear down a carburetor. Because once you pull them apart.
That being said, it's like every time we go to the SEMA show, we see new innovations in self-learning EFI systems and, self-tuning stuff, bolt-on stuff. And it's not totally out of the question, especially some of the cars that you have that you do want to put a few miles on. There's some pretty easy swaps that essentially look like Holley sniper kits. It looks like a carburetor, essentially bolts on like a carburetor. You hide a little brain box somewhere. You probably got to switch to a higher pressure fuel pump, and you put it in its self-learning mode because the vehicles that you're talking about aren't really highly modified. They're from the factory. Right?
So, yeah, so the simplicity will mean that it's that much easier for it to do its job.
And it fires up. It fires up each time, and it's not quite as finicky. And it's just an interesting thought. And then you could go back the other direction when you want to, right? Like Leno's even done this to some of his cars. He's even done switches to like EFI and stuff to make them drivable. And he's got the original parts on a shelf that he could go back when he wants. So that's another thought, for sure. To go in that direction for some of the cars that you love, like the Coronet that you're talking about. Yeah. You don't get into it much because it's the automatic transmission, although a badass car for sure. But something like that, or some of the other manual transmission cars that you do want to get a little more seat time in. Listen, if there's a car in your collection that you want to drive, but it's a hassle each time, right? Because trying to like get it started and get it to perform well, and it never seems like it's dialed in correctly, maybe that's a good candidate to try one of these on if that's absolutely the direction you want to go,
and that's the definition of what I'm doing. That's the definition of Goldberg Garage now as opposed to then. None of those cars were driven then. Now every single one of them has to be driven here. So
and as kind of a newbie on the EFI swap, you could make a nice little installation video for us.
Absolutely. No question. I think I'm gonna do an LS swap in the Biscayne.
Yeah.
But I think the Coronet might be a good candidate for that EFI swap.
Yeah, you know? I think it would. And now that the systems are so much more sophisticated, they've got versions for the dual carb cars and stuff like that. So there's some pretty cool stuff out there, for sure. I mean, Holley, as I mentioned, they come to mind because I was just talking with those guys the other day, about some other stuff. And they've been doing a really kind of leapfrogged, I think, a lot of the guys out there in developing the EFI stuff. So yeah, I think it's worth a conversation even with those guys. Pick a car and plan a project and do the installation. I'm curious to see you and Jackson walk through it. Jackson's a smart guy, your mechanic, but I don't know that he's done one of those swaps. I mean, he understands the
he has. I think he has, but I think it'd be something great to learn on for sure.
Yeah, I think it would be fun to jump into that and see how that would go.
Well, if your boys at Holley are listening, then let's make it happen.
Yeah. Okay, so I put up, I know I was talking about the Lightning last week and your eyes glazed over because it's an electric truck. But I posted the video finally of doing the wheel and tire swap, and then I went out to Eibach. Now I haven't been to Eibach's headquarters before. I wanted to go over there and say hi to everybody in person and take a look at the facility. They're about an hour and a half from here, outside of LA. And they were working on a kit for the Lightning that, I want to say lowers the truck, but let's say it levels the truck. Now, when you think leveling kit, you think of raising the front a little bit, especially on your 4x4 trucks, to level it out. Like you might've done a level on your TRX. But this particular kit goes the opposite direction. It kind of levels it out, but it brings the rear down. So it has a little bit more of a sport truck stance. Now, I think when we were done, we ended up dropping the front only like about a quarter inch, and the rear comes down about 3 inches. So it gave it a nicer look. And if you're, I'm going to put a video up around this, cause I was there for during the installation. I'm going to share the photo of it here on the YouTube channel, as you're listening to this. So
nice. When are you going to do the airflow, the test to see if it,
So that's a good question. So as I drove out to their facility, I noticed the possibly the wheel and tire package that I put on. It's not a weight issue. It's a rolling resistance issue. But going to the wider tire and the softer compound, it seemed to take up some of my range. Now, I went out in the morning, got in the carpool lane, and I was able to do, you know, I was able to go pretty quickly in the morning. I don't know, 80, 85 miles an hour, and just hold it the whole time. So I think that combined with the added rolling resistance, I had to go about 65 miles of driving, and it ate up about 90 miles of range, according to my calculations. But on the way home, when I hit a little bit more traffic, it was a little bit stop and go. You know, sometimes I'm doing 70 miles an hour. Sometimes I'm doing 50 miles an hour. And then, so part of it could be my driving style or the high speed on the highway. But on the way home, 65 miles on the way back, it didn't take 90 miles of range to do it. It did it in about 70 something miles of range. So I don't know if there was a little bit of improvement from the drop, probably not much, because it only dropped about a quarter inch in the front. But I'll walk you guys through the process, or at least I'll just kind of put to not really quite a time-lapse video, but I'll show you exactly kind of an overview of what they did to do it. Now, this has an independent rear in the back. There's coil springs in the back. So when we were done, we did an alignment on it, and it definitely drives straight, but now the rear has camber, and the factory Lightning doesn't have a camber adjustment. Now, I found one aftermarket kit that we could possibly install to address the camber issue and just get it a little bit more streetable. So I don't wear the tires quite as much, but looking into that, and this truck has the onboard scales, right? So if you're in the cabin of the truck, you'll see on the screen, as you add weight to the back, it starts to tell you how much weight you're adding. So you know if you're going to max out the load, and it has the lights and the taillights. So if you're putting stuff in the bed or even hooking up a trailer, it'll tell you what the weight is. Now, it's just a simple sensor. It mounts to the frame and to the suspension, and it has a little linkage in between, and it's on a pivot, and it goes up and down. And when we lower the back of the vehicle, when we lower the back of the truck about 3 inches, it moved that sensor. So it's fine. But when you go to the screen for the onboard scales, there's nothing in the truck, but it thinks the payload is maxed out because it lowered the truck about 3 inches. So now there's a couple of thoughts. There may be a way to zero it out on the screen. I don't know if that's the right solution, because if I add more weight to it, I don't know how much range of motion is in that sensor, right? So I don't think it'd go lower than it is. So, but that's one option. Second option would be the linkage in between the frame mount piece and the suspension mount piece. It's like a little dog bone, like it's just a little bar with that's attached to the two pieces. Maybe I can make one that's shorter. If I can make it shorter, it starts to level it out. And the third option would be just relocate, make some sort of relocation bracket for either the top of the sensor or the bottom of the sensor, or attach it to the frame or the suspension and level it out again. So then when you add weight to the back, the scales will work. So those are the two issues, but it rides fine. We did iBox springs. on all four corners, because like we said, there's coils in the back, and we went with their performance shocks as well. So we did the shocks and the springs. The ride quality seems fine to me. I haven't really noticed much of a difference. It's going to be a little bit stiffer, a little bit harsher. So over more aggressive bumps, I think you'll feel it, but the overall ride quality is fine to me. But a little bit stiffer rate, and I found a little bit better performance and handling overall. Getting the truck a little lower, getting it leveled, and getting a little bit higher spring rate gives it a little bit more of a sport truck feel, especially for something that weighs 7,000 pounds. So it was nice to drive. I might add a little bit more sway bar in the front, and that's it. Kind of take it from there. Now, a friend of mine, this guy Jason from Maker's Garage. Now, Jason is a wonderful engineer, and he started his own company called Maker's Garage. He does a lot of Mustang parts, Fox Mustang parts, like body parts. He's did the carbon fiber splitter that's on my 93 Cobra, and he did the recreation 93 Cobra style wheels that are in 18 inch and has them for different configurations. So if you have an independent rear, if you have the live axle, and by the way, I like what he's doing, because he built this in his garage from scratch, got enough business to open up his own little warehouse, got enough business to invest in more machines. And now he completely designs in CAD, like body pieces, and then makes them, in his shop. He's got the machines to make the plastic pieces and everything. So for this truck, I said, well, I think this truck needs a new, like, front air dam kind of splitter. And I think he's going to give it a shot. He's got the CAD files already for the front of the truck, so he knows how it would attach and what the factory plastic piece would work. But can we make it a little bit more functional? Can we make it just look a little better? We're going to give it a shot. And if we can do it, we might make that piece. And if people like it, he can make them and sell them. And you're supporting a good guy, and you're supporting a small business, and you're going to get a cool looking piece for your truck. His stuff is good. His stuff is really, really nice. He's a super smart engineer. So I just want to be able to work with him. We were looking for a project for like 2 years to work on, even just a small part, going, what part can we create together? And I think maybe this could be something to do. Once you see it and you understand his process, it's going to get your attention. You're never going to have a lightning bill. I know that, but something's going to click in your head and go, oh, that guy could make something cool for me. And maybe it's a piece that becomes sellable at some point. So anyway, that's kind of the next step for this truck.
Speaking of friends of ours that are making moves in the business world, remember I mentioned to you the Pimp My Cover guys?
Yes. Yeah.
I want to give them a huge shout out, because remember when I told you that they reached out to me and I didn't want to respond because of the name of the company?
Yeah.
They've changed it to My Hero Cover.
Yeah, okay. That's better.
So, just a big pat on the back and say, guys, way to go. Way to go. I signed the deal right after they changed it. No.
Yeah. So let's, we'll see what those guys are up to as well.
Oh man, they're making some big moves for sure. And, it's well deserved, I believe. Like I said, the cover's got great quality, and it's really cool because it's a different niche. So there you go.
Before we wrap up, were you ever a fan of the Tucker? You know the car.
Yeah,
the
I mean, Tucker. I saw that car. I mean, the story itself. I mean, that's a car guy isn't a fan, right?
Yeah, and as a kid, I saw the movie, right? I saw, you know, the Tucker movie and loved it. This caught my attention initially on Jalopnik, where there's a Tucker convertible. Tucker Company was working on a convertible with a reinforced frame and chopped the top, and they used a modified version of a GM convertible top. And I don't know that it was completely finished, but there was enough parts from back in the day to finish a handful of the car. So the story of the Tucker, right, was there was 58 frames and bodies, I believe, that were produced, but not only 36 cars officially produced, but enough parts later over the next however many years that cars were built. So there's kind of, in the world of collectability, there's an original Tucker built at the factory. There's a finished Tucker built afterwards. And then I don't know if some people are coming up, maybe making parts. I don't know they're going to be able to make that many parts to do this. Although if you found like a cool chassis and a body and you came up with your own engine, like there'd be kind of a cool hot rod Tucker. Rob Ida, I think, has done those. I think he's done something in that regards as well. And he's very, very cool shop. Very well-versed in the world of Tucker. So there's this Tucker convertible. It's coming up for sale. And it was just weird that it was on eBay of all places. It didn't go to auction. The guy that wrote the Jalopnik article was actually...
What was he able to dig up? Anything as far as like why it didn't go to auction?
So that's interesting because I had sent this to you a day ago, and now between then and now, when we're doing the podcast, the auction's ended. I don't think anybody bought it. I think this got so much attention right away that people are like, why is it on eBay? Why do your photos suck? Like, what's going on? And the guy was like, I'm in over my head. And either somebody just bought it from him and that's it, auction ended, and he just got what he wanted, I don't know, or he realized there's probably more money on the table or this should go to auction, or I can't say for sure what was going on, but I believe...
Somebody's got to know, and I can't wait to hear it.
I want to know. I believe a dealer was listing it, and I agree with the Jalopnik guy. We're like, it wasn't really the best photos. It wasn't like taking out for such a rare, interesting car. You were just expecting more of a presentation, and the guy at Jalopnik seemed to get really angry at the end of his article when he was like, if you're trying to sell a car on the internet for $2.4 million, hire a fucking photographer to capture your car for your listing. He said, this magnificent car looks like a pile of dog shit because the cheap bastard didn't feel like having a car trucked out to a gorgeous location for a pro snapper to capture it at its good side. I couldn't agree more. And maybe that's literally why the listing has been taken down. But who wrote the article? Bradley Brownell? Anyway. Great article on Jalopnik. Thanks for posting that. Thanks for calling out that car. I'm a fan of the Tucker. I always liked the Tucker.
I am too. And let's be perfectly honest. Not everybody in the world that has something like this has the capabilities or the knowledge or the connections to present it properly. I mean, what if it's just somebody who wasn't prepared? Give them the benefit of the doubt, for God's sakes, before you jump their ass.
I mean, I agree, but I swear this is a dealer that was listing it. You just kind of feel like they should know better. I don't know.
I didn't look at it, but
yeah. I mean, when you click on their listing on eBay, they have some car parts, so maybe I don't know enough about it. Anyway,
it was a marketing firm just trying to get some traction.
You know, it's interesting that you even bring that up. This isn't what you were thinking, but many times in the past and still now, like cars that we've owned, like some of Adam's collection has shown up as an eBay listing or a listing online. And then they try to sell it. And then if they get a bite on it, they call us and go, hey, do you want to sell this car? I've got a buyer for you. Like one of our racing cars is up for sale. Like it's presented like they've been consigned this listing, and it's total bullshit. It's all bullshit. Like I haven't done a deep dive, but you may find one of your cars. You may find pictures taken from the Mustang magazine of your lawman, somebody trying to sell it, and they're going to go, hey, I got a buyer for your lawman. They're trying to sell it ahead of time so they can get a commission.
Yeah, and I say, I got a shell for my 1911 too.
Right. I was going to say it's a shitty move that kind of undermines the spirit of this hobby. Understood. You know, I just think that's a it's a douchey move.
Everything has become fair game because of the thing we're using right now to teleport this wonderful.
Yes. And by the way, there's 100% difference between, you know, somebody calling you and going, hey, you know, I was talking to a guy the other day that's very interested in your lawman, you know, like a Bruce Kennepa calling you going, would you ever be interested in selling it? I'll connect you guys or let me do it. But to create a listing and be like, and put photos and a description and imply that that's been consigned to you or you've got the listing, that's dumb.
Well, you can get a cease and desist because it's false advertising.
It is, but it's also just like a waste of time. Yeah, and as soon as you get one guy to take it down, somebody else does it again. It's just
I don't know. There's 3,000 Facebooks that are Goldberg, and I don't have one of them, right?
Yeah.
So it's a never ending process that is not worth the. It is. It's cheesy.
It's just dumb. It's a lame way of doing business. I mean, if you knew somebody and you're a friend of a friend, I totally get it. We could go to events all day long and you know, people are like, hey, Bill, by the way, you know, love your modified TRX. You ever thinking of selling it? Love the chat. That's it. That's a perfect conversation. Love that conversation. You go, thank you for noticing my truck. Sure. Yeah. I'll list it.
That's
someday.
Also different than if we're at a show and somebody says, man, you know, I love Kindig's new Corvette that he's doing. And I talk to the guy for 5 minutes and the guy says, yeah, I'll buy one right now. And I pick up the phone and call Kindig and say, hey, dude, I got a guy that wants to buy your, that's a different thing. Right?
That's different.
That's what the car culture is all about. Stuff
yeah.
like that.
Misrepresentation
of people.
And to pretend that you can sell it, you have the right or the permission to sell it ahead of time. Those guys that put up those cars and then they call, I'm like, I don't know who you talk to. Don't ever work with that guy again. They're not representing my car. I'm not going to sell it. My suggestion is you lose that guy's phone number. you know, but anyway, that's my little venting for the day. We're going to wrap things up. Is there anything I'm missing?
One more question.
Yeah.
In the Candymatic, since it's a race car, but I do not race it, and I will be driving it on the street, and you would normally put water in the radiator of a race car as opposed to coolant.
Yes.
Does that apply to how I'm going to be using the vehicle?
Because
I'm not going to be taking 10-second strips down the freaking quarter mile and then shutting the car down.
Yeah.
I'm going to be driving it a little bit more.
No, you'll be fine, but add a little water wetter in there. So water dissipates heat better than anything.
Yes.
Add a bottle of water wetter in there. I think Redline makes it. Or some equivalent product just to help prevent any corrosion or anything in there. And it helps lubricate a little bit as well. So you can run water with water wetter and you're fine. Sure. Yeah. You don't need to have to put the coolant in there. Also,
final question.
You know, it's more about freezing than it is than anything else. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. Water with some water.
Remember the winter's here.
Yes.
But winter's coming. It's in a controlled environment.
So I was just going to say, is it going to get 0 degrees inside your building at some point? Like, is it going to get to freezing temperatures in the building? No, it won't. So I think you're going to be fine. And listen, I've only lived in warm climates. So I've even just done water and water wetter, you know, in cars. Cause I don't need an antifreeze per se. So, And you want it, you know, I mean, for overheating, you didn't want it to boil over, but I've had cars run perfectly fine with that combination. And you can just get a bottle of that stuff, put it in there. All right. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And as a reminder, these shows, we're putting them up on YouTube as well. So you can go to the CarCast YouTube channel if you want to see these. I'm going to start working on my environment behind me. So as you see me sitting in this room, I'll come up with something a little bit better. I'm starting to plan it. It'll just give me an opportunity to clean this place up and move stuff around a little bit. The Cybertruck sold, so it's on its way out. I've been waiting for that goddamn thing to move out of here so I can take all the stuff out of my little office hut here and then reorganize it. But okay, guys, thanks so much. We'll catch you next time. Keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.